The following audio was recorded at the Pacific School Leadership Institute, which was held at Waits Lake Bible Camp near Valley, Washington, on October 19 and 20,
2023. All right, so the title of is what makes or breaks a teacher, and I think the point here is our schools deal with a lot of teacher turnover, and that can create some problems. We end up with a lot of inexperienced teachers, and so what are the things that help us keep teachers teaching longer? So these three men are very wise and going to share their wisdom with us. They are friends of mine that over the years I'm slowly learning to know better because I don't get to see them very much. But so this is Jonah, and pick up the mic, Jonah. How many years have you taught, and can you just give us two sentences on your role right now in your school?
So I have taught 17 years. I'm in my 18th year. I am the upper grade teacher in our classroom, in our school, and enjoy my 8 students that I'm currently teaching.
All right, Aaron, you're next. I think you're sort of a can teach, will travel type of guy. Could you tell us a little bit about, again, a few sentences on your teaching history and how many languages you can teach in?
Well, how much vocabulary do I need? I taught 3 years in Oregon and 5 years in Bangladesh, and I can teach very well in Bangla, which you're not supposed to be able to say when you're an English teacher. You're supposed to use only English. So that's a bad admission on my part. And now I work for CLE, and I travel and try to help schools be successful and teachers be equipped to teach well.
All right, and Jonathan, a couple sentences from you about your history and your current role.
I am in my 19th year of teaching, and I've taught mostly upper grades, but I've taught all the grades except first grade. Never taught first grade. I've taught at 3 different schools, including one rather hectic year in Belize. And I'm teaching this year, and I'm teaching currently 12 students.
Any idea how many co-teachers you've had, Jonathan?
20.
He says 20. So I'm going to just start with you, Jonathan, on this first question on this paper. What is the biggest factor in teacher turnover? So you've seen a lot of co-teachers come and go. You've come and gone yourself a few times from a couple schools, it sounds like. So which of these four options do you gravitate to? A, is the teacher's young and just moves on, gets married, etc. B, is inadequate training to be successful. C, excessive responsibility or stress. And D, is frustration with school dysfunction or issues. Which one stands out to you?
I actually did a quick poll, and I would say that most of the teachers that I taught with who stopped teaching stopped because of point A, which is teacher is young and moves on in life, or gets married, etc., finds a better job, decides that they don't want to teach anymore just because they're not really a teacher. I think, I forget the exact number, it was maybe around 10. And then 4 of them are still teaching, I believe. And the others, I would say, have quit because of C, which is excessive responsibility and or stress. And that is my opinion in looking at them. So I would say A, just be my first response.
Mr. Durstein, do you agree or have another comment to make?
I agree with the things he said. The teachers I thought of are the ones that I taught with in Bangladesh. You can show up for a job of teaching and be kind of a quiet quitter, and be a very ineffective teacher. And I saw that happen a lot there. I would say of the teachers that I taught with, of maybe a dozen in Bangladesh. I'm just trying to think of all of them. I think maybe all of them except one or two really... one or two of them really tried and were successful, and they all wanted to be successful, and they weren't trained, they weren't equipped, and maybe they didn't care. And I would say for them, okay, the turnover, they kept coming to Bangladesh, but they did a very poor job in their classes, and their students quit coming. And I think a little bit of training would have gone a long, long way in helping them be successful, and it didn't.
A sentence or two from you, John.
So, if I'm correct, all of my co-teachers are either married or still teaching. I myself did actually quit at one point in time, with, for the wonderful reason, at least I thought it was at the time, that I got married. And from my point of view as a young man from non-Mennonite background, I thought that that was just what Mennonite guys do. And the good Lord, to put it mildly, he spanked me back into the classroom.
Now, it's a good thing we didn't, this topic does not go into solving these problems, because a discussion on taking vows of celibacy might be kind of troublesome in this setting. Since that seems to be the way y'all are leaning. Many of them just got married. All right, moving on to number two. Why do large schools seem better able to retain teachers long term? It seems to me that small schools have more turnover than large schools do. Now, maybe I'm wrong on that, but we'll hear about that. So the multiple choice questions, A, be organized or more organized and consistent school administration. B, better pay. C, teachers better appreciated and supported. D, more resources available, less teacher overload. So, rather, as we said, limited time. So, a few succinct answers from each of you, starting with Jonah.
I honestly am speaking from a small school standpoint. So, what keeps longer term teachers in bigger schools, I would probably say that it would be A and or D. I do have a number of long-term teaching friends from back east, and it does seem like it's easy for them because of the resources available and how organized their large schools are.
I think another thing that comes into play with the larger schools is the pool they have to draw from of teachers. They have options, and they have a board that is maybe a little bit more on top of it than a lot of us are. And they scout for teachers, and they hire them earlier, and they get a lot of high-quality teachers. And then they have maybe the resources to keep them better. But I think just because you have a small school doesn't mean you can't have a teacher for a really long time if you put the energy into finding and equipping them.
I agree with what these guys said. All of these reasons that you gave are valid reasons. And I would tend to say with A, I think A is my choice as the best one. And partly because I think larger schools tend to have more long-term teachers and better school culture. And I think the two go together. But so that's why I think A, biggest reason.
So many of us are from small schools, and so in my mind, I look at a big school and go, what are the things my little school is missing? How can we put some more into this little school to help it be as attractive as the bigger school? So we've heard some things of how the bigger schools have some advantages. Maybe we can replicate that. Number three, how important is job satisfaction in keeping teachers long term? So we hear that in the workplace, job satisfaction. If you hate your job, you're not going to keep your job. Most likely you'll find something else you like better. So now, brother, if you can put on your school administration hats or your school board hat and think about, imagine you have one of those hats. And how important is it for us to be concerned about teacher satisfaction? And we'll go in the other order again, Jonathan.
Well, that putting on the hat doesn't, that throws me for a loop. So if I can just take my hat off here a little bit, I think job satisfaction is very important. And a love of the children is very, very vital for every long-term teacher that I know of. I think there's two types of teachers, the relational teachers and the academic teachers. And I'm not sure that one is actually better than the other one. In fact, probably not. I think relational teachers last longer. So that was pretty random. Here you go.
That's really good. Job satisfaction, for me, if I can't do something, if I can't succeed at it, I can't do it. And job satisfaction to me is a job well done. And I've seen a lot of young teachers who really want to be teachers, who want to do a good job, and they come trying, and the first year they're just like, I'm not a teacher. And the truth is, if I would have been dumped into the world of welding with absolutely no teaching, I would have concluded in a month or two that I was not a welder. My metal didn't stick in the right place. And I think job satisfaction, we have to be able to, you have satisfaction when you're a good welder and a good teacher and your students learn. And you're not going to teach if you know you're crashing and burning.
Putting on the school board hat actually is something I have done. And the first year I was on the school board was the last year that teacher taught. In fact, I was so bad at being a school board member, they kicked me off the board and into the classroom. But how important is teacher satisfaction? Personally, I think that if we have teachers in our classrooms who don't want to be there, we need to find somebody else. Mm-hmm. What hurts me is when I see teachers who want to be in a classroom, who are good at their occupation, and because of a lack of parental support or lack of financial backing, they step out of the calling. That, to me, is a crying shame.
So it looks like number four, question number four, piggybacks onto question number three. So if job satisfaction is a big deal to keeping teachers in the classroom, then maybe training is the key to that. So how about number four? Aaron, you go first this time, and then hand to your left, and then over to Joan after that. How important is teacher training in getting teachers past the two-year mark?
Well, I think this question is a huge question. I don't think you can really say what it's exceedingly important, because we're not actually just thinking of a teacher making it past the 2 year mark. We're thinking of the year that he taught, the first year he taught all these children, and were they successfully schooled? Were they taught well? I think to dump our teachers into a classroom without proper training, and when I say training, I think mentoring into that role, we do our children a terrible disservice and likely sacrifice a really good teacher to a little bit of laziness. We have to train them. We have to mentor them.
I would say it's very important. And if I hadn't gotten some training about 2 years, and I was actually past the two-year mark, I wouldn't be teaching anymore.
I would say amen to that. In fact, during my first school term, at about, I think it was a 4 or 6 week mark, I thought I was dying. And thankfully, there was a CMTI meeting, and there was a long-term teacher there who was willing to spend, I think it was close to an hour with me, and pull my head up above the waves and tell me that if I kept swimming and taking a breath whenever I came up, yeah, I would get over it, and I did.
So question number five then, what kind of teacher training is most effective at supporting teacher longevity? A, teacher training events. B, self-paced course study. C, personal mentoring, which Aaron already briefly mentioned, and D, on-the-job training, also known as sink or swim, which is what Jonah just talked about. Why don't you start this time, Jonah?
Well, I hope you picked up that the teacher training event I was at was a lifeline for me, and that the one that I attended after my first year was definitely a second shot in the arm, because by that time I had all the questions and none of the answers anymore. And thankfully there were people there who did have the answers. I will say that for teacher longevity, if it wasn't for several of the other brethren here, personally, Aaron, Jonathan, and Jonathan Erb being willing to mentor me at some low points in my life, they've gotten some tearful phone calls and held my hand through the scary parts. And my wife has also done a wonderful job of mentoring me and keeping me from being overly enthusiastic of my own ideas.
I think that was powerful, Jonah. My wife is that way too, and you all those things, everything he said. I think of teacher training, I think of two different things. One of the things I think about is really happens at CMTI and WFTI is inspiration, inspiring talks, networking, connections, school vision. What do you want the school to be in 20 years? Those are things that teach well in places like that. Not very good about, I don't care how you try, it's not been effective for me as much. What do you do in front of your classroom? How do you manage your time well? How do you do three classes in 15 minutes? That's very, I mean, it's teachable at these places, but it's very easily teachable in a classroom as a mentor. And so I think it should be like a two-prong thing. Do the kumbaya of the meeting, and then also do the hands-on. You know what? The clock went 5 minutes, and weren't effective with that time. Also in your classroom.
Teacher training events have been very powerful for me and instructive for me. Networking with other teachers has been at least as valuable as the teacher training events. Personal mentoring is something that I'm not sure that, regardless of what Jonas says, didn't feel like I did it, but maybe he did it for me. I guess I'm not sure what it means. I thought it meant following somebody around a classroom. And that sounds intriguing to me, some of the things Aaron has talked about. On-the-job training, sink or swim, is necessary to live, and we need somebody there to just put scuba gear on sometimes, because we just get down there and you can't get up for a while. But it's not really helpful in when we think about promoting teacher longevity.
Absolutely.
What I was referring to in personal mentoring, I guess, long distance, is that teachers need someone who they can call when they feel like they're drowning, who can tell them that it's not actually that bad. It gets a lot worse.
That's awesome.
How many of your schools, of the schools represented here, have some kind of a mentoring program in place for new teachers that someone checks in on them or helps them get their year started? Raise your hands if your school has something like that organized. Thank you, Darren Berkey. Glad you came.
me too.
Oh, I'm sorry. Glad you came too. I think we've got enough time. Can you take about 1 minute or 2 minutes and tell us what you do at your school?
Please do. Okay, so we have a it's actually modeled a little bit after the program they do in Halsey. Very effective. We want to have the new teacher come in and be mentored by an experienced teacher. This year, our school, they had this weird idea that I would be the mentor. I don't know and this year, the new teacher came in, I sat in his classroom, I didn't even teach. I generally like to teach the first few days, and then he takes a class and works his way into the classroom that way. But he taught, and I sat in the back, and I critiqued him, and I gave him a lot of feedback. And when the students went home, I demonstrated what he should have done. And basically, there are some benchmarks that we try to get to as a mentor, with a mentor and a new teacher, involving lesson preparation, lesson delivery. How that looks, if you're going to be teaching three classes, how much time you can allot, what a class looks like. And then also, how do you dismiss for recess? How do you respond to your students? What's acceptable noise in your classroom? And down to the nitty-gritty details. We're trying to give them a template they can use and work with. And if they go and take it from there and go take a detour and do their own thing, I want them to at least have a program that works to start with. And this is what we use in Romania, we have 5-star reviews of this idea. I think if you don't have it in your schools, start doing it. Make it happen. It's a life changing thing for your teachers.
So your goal is that the teacher feels like somebody is in their corner. And they have a place to go to, a designated place to go to. They're getting input on things they didn't even know they needed input on. And just the power of show me instead of
exactly.
Just tell me.
Yeah.
Thank you for that explanation. Well, moving on to number 6. Is the school board always the right people to mentor a teacher towards longevity in the classroom? So we're talking about this mentoring. Maybe it's a quick answer. And Jonah, can you begin?
Short answer is no. School boards are good at being the authority, having the long-term vision, and letting the teacher know when they step out of line. But when it comes to practical in the classroom techniques, unless a school board member has a number of years teaching experience, they're probably not qualified to give that advice. And honestly, I don't think they should feel bad about that. Mm-hmm. The best school board members I have had would make horrible teachers, but they're great board members.
I would agree with the key word being always. Is the school board always the right people to mentor a teacher? They might be sometimes, possibly, but not always.
I agree 100% with that. I think, though, the school board does have a place in that they need to make it happen. Mm-hmm. That's your job. You need to make the mentoring happen, line it up, get the people in place, and do it. If you don't, nobody will.
So what you all are telling us as boards, don't be afraid of our weaknesses. Just embrace it. Find the people that have the strengths needed to carry forward.
Amen.
Number 7, which group has the largest impact on teacher longevity? A, the church community. B, school patrons. C, school board administration. D, students. E, co-teachers. F, mentors. Go ahead, John.
Again, these are all big factors. And what we say, this might be one point where we're all different, I don't know. But for me, I think it would be the school patrons as the most defining thing. And I've often said that it's not rebellious students that are discouraging to me. It's rebellious parents. It's unsupported parents. If they're not supporting me at home, I just feel like I don't have any authority and I don't have any power in the classroom. And it's discouraging.
Amen.
Amen to that. I was going to say church community, but it's the same words he said.
Number 8. If you set out to break a teacher, what would your top 3 methods be? Sometimes you got to go to the dark side to see what you should be doing.
Go ahead, John.
If you're a board member, you should make as many detached decisions as possible without
visiting school to see whether your decisions are working or even if there was a problem to start with. And without asking the teachers for their input, I mean, they're just teachers anyway. And if your board operates where the chairman changes regularly, and you've got to be in your bonnet when you become chairman, change everything the first 3 weeks. Make every change you possibly can. Your teachers will, they will appear taller because of all their hair standing on end. The other thing would be to have parents who believe that it's open season on the teacher. And for that to be okay in your community, for the parents to discuss the teacher, their methods, that's been mentioned already, and how that should have been done. And the last thing would just be for the community as a whole to consider school as a necessary evil, something to be done with, and we just have to do this. And we're so sorry you have to be in our classroom.
So lack of understanding of what the teachers are working with, change everything, and then just poor culture in your community and your school. You're pretty sure that would break us. Okay.
Go ahead.
So I think those are excellent reasons, excellent ways. I think if I was going to try, I would add this to the arsenal. I would try to communicate with, if I were a board member, I would try to communicate with the teachers in such a way to let them know that there are some of those parents who are not really on their side and they're problem parents, and I would work really hard to get wedges in between the parents and the teacher, and have the parents think they're kind of against it. They have to work with this problem teacher, and they really have different goals, but here they are, you know, they have these problems. And I would work really hard to get them not to talk to each other. You can't talk to him. He's unreasonable. That father, no, steer clear of him. He's a problem father. That mother, oh, if you see her coming, head for the men's room, and whatever. And incidentally, that's what I would do to break a community as well. But you'll definitely not have teachers or parents that survive well, and their children. Who said something about when the elephants fight, the grass gets trampled?
All right, so on top of what Jonah said, you would just destroy communication, and that would break the teacher.
Well, I actually did it once, caused the demise of an excellent teacher. I married her. It was very effective.
Yeah, I did that too.
But I would say, in my own words, some crossover what they said, be very negative about school in education, and tell stories in children's meeting about the stupid teacher that I had and how dumb she was and didn't catch on, but we learned in spite of her. And I would promote gossip about the teacher. I would ask the children if she gets mad a lot, and when she wears her purple sweater, does that mean she's going to be mad at you today? And I would believe all the negative stories that my child brings home, and I will always believe my child because, of course, I love my child, and he's going to tell me the truth, or she's going to tell me the truth and expose this wicked teacher. Enlarge the show content, of course.
I've listened to you talk enough that I have a hunch you probably didn't make those things up. Well, I know he married his wife, so he didn't make that up. But anyway. For me, sometimes it's helpful, or in this exercise, it's helpful to just think about, so what are all the wrong things we know about? And then, what's that verse? It's one of Paul's books in the Bible. I don't remember which one, but he says, he's talking about Satan getting the advantage of us, and he says, we are not ignorant of his devices. Mm-hmm. Well, we Short put on a great show of complete ignorance of what is going to happen if I act like this. At least I do sometimes. So we're kind of dragging those devices out there and thinking about it. How do we break a t-shirt? Well, we don't want to do those things. And now finally, some positive things to end on. Question number 9. What advice do you have for school boards wishing to keep their teachers longer? Now, brother, you got 5 minutes among the three of you, so you can let it out a little bit more.
Well, I've taught at the same school now on my 14th year, so I guess my school board is doing reasonably well, and I would say that, too. We've said a lot of negative things about school board, too. We do really appreciate the work that school boards do, and positive feedback is very helpful. There's the thing that if you don't hear anything, you must be doing all right. That's not really a great school culture, and I think our school does better than that. I think that most of the time our school board has done a lot better than that. This thing of bringing coffees to school gets mentioned so often that you might be tired of it. It's a little thing that can make a big difference. And I would say it is often the little things, the little shows of support that are just done continually are really, really helpful. And I think, too, when teachers feel like they are heard, that they have a voice in the direction of the school, it's really valuable. I think that was my 2 minute report.
Well, I think here I am harping on the mentoring again, but I think you should mentor your new teachers in. Give them the tools to succeed. And once they, and that does a couple things. Helps the teacher feel like he's a part of, you have his back. As a school board, it also helps the children see that the teacher is in, has the full support of the school board behind him. And the other thing that I would say, so mentor your teachers in, give them a clear what you want to see of them. Tell them what you expect of them. You want them to get their books done, you want them to do. And then kind of try not to micromanage them in the process of doing that. Come and check on them, ask some questions, listen to what they have to say, but to really micromanage and to be there all the time and to be your pencil scratching on the paper and in their faces is stressful for teachers. I don't know. Leave them a little bit of room. But saying that, visit often to their classrooms. We have a thing. We try every. It's not near enough, but we try to have every school board member in our community visit every month, at least once, possibly more, and visit for a long period of time. Try for a half a day or a whole day. Bring them food, and listen. Listen to what they have to say. Listen to the children, and when there's a gap in communication. When there's a problem, bring the people together that have the problem. Don't necessarily try to be Mr. Fix-It. If the teacher calls you up and says, hey, I have a problem with this parent, well, or this child, well, you know what? Generally, you would call the parent, talk to them. Maybe get some advice from the school board, but try to keep the parent communication lines completely open. Mm-hmm. And that'll the teacher satisfaction long-term will be good.
I would just like, I was not in the workshop about a school board handbook. However, I think that is far underrated. When I mentioned the turnover in school boards and sudden changes in the actions of chairmen and so on, I have personal experience that over and over. Sometimes it felt good, sometimes it felt very insecure. I had school boards who would come and ask me how to do things, and I was the teacher. They're supposed to be telling me how to do things. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, school boards micromanaging. Mm-hmm. A handbook that could level some of that out. Develop school culture. Have a way that you do things in your school. It's going to go along with the handbook. I'm talking about keeping things steady. Mm-hmm. Keep school a place where people know what's happening, what to expect, and that teachers can feel safe and secure doing their job. They know what's expected of them. They don't suddenly get told that they're crossing a line, doing something they're not supposed to, or that they have not been doing something that they were supposed to. And then develop your teachers. My teaching has been improved dramatically by my board members coming to me and saying, this isn't right, or you are crossing a line here or there. And do it charitably, do one thing at a time. We teachers have lots of holes in our characters, so work at us gently. Chop the tail off 1 inch at a time.
Take it all.
Jonah, Jonathan, Aaron, thank you very much for your input on these questions.